Well, let's go ahead and get started then. I'm Melanie Reif, and I am the Administrative Law Judge for the Utah Public Service Commission. And this morning we're holding a scheduling conference in docket 15-06601. This is the matter of the formal complaint of Insight Towers Development, LLC, against Dixie Escalante Rural Electric Association, Inc. Let's go ahead and take appearances, starting with you, Mr. Sackett.
Gary G. Sackett of the Jones, Waldo, Holbrook & McDonough firm for Intel Towers Development.
Thank you. And on the line, sir, could you please make your appearance?
Sure. Liddell Lobb, President and CEO of Dixie Escalante Rural Electric Association.
Okay. And Mr. Lobb, just for my reference, are you an attorney?
I am not.
Okay. And again, what is your position with Dixie?
President and CEO.
President and CEO. Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. David Crabtree, I am an attorney, and I'm appearing on behalf of Dixie Rural Escalante.
Okay. Mr. Jenner.
And I'm Justin Jenner with the Utah Attorney General's Office. I represent the Utah Division of Public Utilities. And sitting next to me at the council table here is Artie Powell, with Dr. Powell, with the division.
Good morning. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Appreciate it very much. Just for reference, is there anyone here on behalf of St. George? Okay. Just wanted to make sure. Mr. Sackett, this is your complaint, so I'll let you have the floor. What we're hoping to do this morning is identified in the notice of scheduling conferences. We're hoping to set a schedule, so I hope the parties have had an opportunity to discuss a proposed schedule. You can let me know about that.
Well, we discussed briefly before the hearing was opened and arrived at no resolution. As a preliminary matter, and for full disclosure, Insights has filed a contemporaneous lawsuit in Fifth District Court in St. George. This is a somewhat complicated situation, and Insights has decided that the way to try to solve its rock and a hard place problem is to look in both jurisdictions, we fear, and Mr. Crabtree has already identified this, we fear the problem of each jurisdiction saying, let the other jurisdiction handle it. We believe that the commission here has sort of the first shot at the jurisdiction, and it's the simpler shot, so to speak. That is to say, there's the primary question of whether or not Dixie Power, has a public service obligation to serve. Apart from the question of what it might cost or what they might charge for that service, we believe it's necessary to sort out first what obligation there is, if any. If the commission were to decide that as a result of the 1981 agreement between Dixie and St. George, that Dixie no longer has any obligation to serve, that their territory for public service is no longer, does no longer include the site where Insight plans to construct their tower, then we're finished. That is to say, we only have recourse to the courts. On the other hand, and in this simple case, it seems to us, if the commission were to decide that no, Dixie was not entitled to and did not abandon its original service territory. The territory we're talking about is in the county. It's in Washington County. It's not in St. George City. The city has no obligation to serve as a result of a statute that was passed by the Utah legislature approximately 2 years ago, I believe. And they have their discretionary authority to serve, and they've decided and told us in no uncertain terms that they will not serve InSight unless the fee owner of the property on which the InSight Towers site is located will annex to the city. And those people are the Gooblers, who own a large ranch in that area, and they've said absolutely not. So we've got an organization that desperately needs an electric power. We have an organization, the City of St. George, who refuses to provide the power. We have another organization, namely Dixie, that we believe still holds a certificate of convenience and necessity to serve the area, and they have an obligation to serve that area. I won't go into all of the arguments in the complaint, but it's our view that Dixie never did properly abandon that area. You can't just up and sell off your obligation to serve when you have a certificate of public convenience and necessity. So our view is, and I'm sorry this is going on a little longer than you might have expected, our view is that this procedures here could be bifurcated, with the first issue being a rather simple issue of whether or not Dixie Power has the obligation to serve, still has the obligation to serve the site that InSight Towers wants to construct a telecommunications tower on. That can be probably resolved relatively quickly with relatively little discovery involved. If it turns out that the commission says, no, the 1981 agreement where Dixie sold off its facilities in that area to St. George relieves them of any obligation to serve in that area, then we're through here. We'll have to go back and see if we can't get some equitable relief from the 5th District. But if the commission says, no, you cannot, Dixie, simply by a one-page contract abandon your obligation to serve under your certificate of convenience and necessity. If that's the case, then the real issue here is how does Dixie serve? And that's a complicated issue. So I think that it doesn't make sense to wrap all those things into one piece. We can decide them sequentially and get on with it. I think it would be easy to set out a schedule for the first phase of this and get that decided. It would be decided, it seems to me, on a motion for partial summary disposition.
Okay, Mr. Second. Apart from that, Dixie does have, under commission rules, 30 days to respond to the complaint.
Yes.
So are you proposing that the 30 days to respond to the complaint precede the deadline for motions?
Yes, I think they get full chance to craft an answer.
Just a moment, sir. And was there anything else that you wanted to mention as far as how you see this being played out, so to speak?
No, I think that, as I calculated, their answer is due on May 7th, 30 days after the mailing date of the complaint. And so I would suggest that, I'm not sure an intervener deadline comes in here. I don't think there are many parties that would be interested, but someplace along the line an intervener deadline would be appropriate.
Speaking of interveners, do you think St. George will intervene despite the difference in nature of their practice?
Well, I doubt it, but I haven't talked to them about it. They've been quite adamant that about their position, and my guess is, and this is a conjecture, that they're not interested in even having the appearances of subjecting themselves to the jurisdiction of the commission.
Okay.
So beyond the answer date, I would think that initial discovery, we can get it prepared, and most of it's probably going to come from our side, could be out relatively quickly within a week to 10 days.
Are you anticipating that the response would come in first and then the motions would follow that?
Yes, I think that's fair.
Okay. And again, the date that you're calculating for the answer date is which? What were you?
May 7th.
Okay. Is there anything else, sir, before I turn to Mr. Crabtree?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Thank you for waiting, sir.
No, thank
Please
you.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to interject because what I may say, what I have to say may affect some of the questioning on the dates. Actually, we look at it somewhat similar to Mr. Sackett, but almost inverse from the way he looks at it. The one proceeding that's currently ongoing in which all the parties that are indispensable to the issue are sub judice, are subject to the jurisdiction of the decider, is the Fifth Circuit Court, Fifth District Court action. The city is a defendant, we are a defendant, Insight chose that forum, and it's true, the underlying question is not whether or not there's a certificate issued by the Public Service Commission. The issue raised both here and in the Fifth District Court is the effect of a 1981 agreement between Dixie Power and the City of St. George. In those two proceedings, this one and the court proceeding, Insight seems to be taking diametrically opposed positions. Here it's asserting that notwithstanding the agreement or what the agreement may have intended or not intended, that it would not have any effect to remove the service obligation of Dixie. In the court action, it's asserting that the intent was and should be enforced, that the service territory was abandoned and that the city has now that assumed by that contract the obligation to serve. We think that what ought to happen logically is that this proceeding should be stayed. Let the court decide that issue with all the parties before it. And otherwise, we run the very real risk of inconsistent rulings by the commission here and by the court down there. I don't know what the court does with a commission ruling on the effectiveness or non-effectiveness of that 1981 agreement when St. George City, a party to that agreement, isn't here before the commission.
Mr. Crabtree, can you give me some information about when the lawsuit was filed at Fifth District and where you are in the
Certainly. I received the summons. I received a copy of the summons about an hour ago. I believe the complaint was signed some maybe a week ago, I don't know, but it was served at either Thursday or Friday, and I received the first copy that I received, like I said, about an hour ago.
Your Honor, was filed the same date as this one in Fifth District. The service, I suspect, was maybe a day or two afterwards, I don't know. The service was originally on Mr. Lau. He may be able to shed light on that.
Okay. A question for both of you gentlemen, please. So in as much as there is another matter pending and there has been an interest shown in filing a motion subsequent to the answer that is due, Mr. Crabtree, perhaps this question is best posed to you. In as much as you've raised the issue of requesting a stay, Wouldn't that be a motion that you could file at the same time that Mr. Sackett would be filing a motion in this matter? In other words, we would set a date for the filing of dispositive motions.
Well, I see it more effective if we file a motion to stay before our answers.
Okay. Well, the commission certainly doesn't want to preclude that option to you, and in as much as you choose to do that, I think that would be a strategy decision that would be yours to make. So I guess the issue is, are you ready to move forward with scheduling, or is it your preference that you have the opportunity to file a request to stay and then file an answer should that motion not be granted?
I would prefer the latter so that we don't end up calendaring up a lot of motion practice and dates that may never be needed.
Okay. Mr. Sackett, how do you feel about that?
I don't think that's the right order. It's pretty much clear to us that what we're asking for as a first part of a perhaps bifurcated proceeding is something that can be disposed of relatively quickly in the overall scheme of how long it takes to sort things out. And it will certainly be quicker than any preliminary or final decision in the Fifth District. The issue of whether or not the commission believes that Dixie still has the authority and obligation to serve is a straightforward question that we can resolve, you can resolve, relatively quickly, and by relatively I mean relative to how long it will take for matters to unfold in Fifth District Court. If it turns, it just seems like judicial economy and administrative economy is to get that question sorted out. And there's no question in my mind that Dixie is going to, I don't want to speak for them, but it is our theory that Dixie will not, that St. George will not be interested in coming here. It will take its position that it's laid out in sort of hardline fashion. We believe that Dixie would, as a public service provider, may not want to be in Fifth District Court. We can't tell that, but we know they belong here. They are a public utility. They are subject to the jurisdiction of this commission, and this issue is a primary issue to be decided, and I think it can be decided relatively quickly. There's not all that much that needs to be done in order to establish whether or not, from the commission's point of view, as a legal matter, does Dixie have the obligation to serve this site or not? And if it does, then we have to sort out what kind of service should it provide. But that's the second part of the bifurcated proceeding.
Mr. Crabtree, do you?
I don't know how, because that would probably be true if there weren't this intervening issue raised by Insight itself about the effect of the agreement. If this were just a straightforward service area boundary question, I think I would agree that that's the proper disposition and order of the disposition to take place. Insight is the one that's raised the issue of what did it mean in 1981 when the city of St. George and Dixie entered into this agreement transferring facilities. It is saying to the court, the effect of that was that the city assumed and relieved Dixie of the obligation to serve. Telling the commission here, doesn't matter what the intent was, Dixie retains the obligation to serve. Those two are incompatible. I don't know how you or anyone here at the commission can address the issue raised by Insight with respect to that agreement without having the party, St. George City, who is the other party to that agreement. Insight was not a party to that agreement, obviously. How do you call witnesses? How do you get the testimony from the city?
Is St. George a party in that lawsuit?
Yes.
And Mr. Sackett, I know you are seeking expedited review in this case, and that's why we scheduled this so quickly. Are you requesting similar review in the 5th District?
No, is there an
injunction or anything like that?
It has not yet been filed. And my suggestion about Mr. Crabtree's argument is that the positions are not inconsistent because it's sequential. The argument here is that Dixie improperly and unlawfully abandoned its obligation in that 1981 agreement. If the commission were to decide that is essentially to say that the 1981 agreement really was ineffective. If the commission decides that no, it was an effective contract, they were entitled to abandon what they did, then it's true that the issue shifts to the contractual issue. But the predecessor to that is deciding by the commission whether or not that contract was appropriate. The fact is that Dixie never did come to the commission, so we don't know whether the commission would have approved it or not. We don't know what the commission's view is about a late concern about it. That is, it's our view that the commission should say, you can't do that. You can't just abandon your public service obligation. If that's the commission's view, then it essentially says at least parts of the 1981 agreement, the jurisdictional parts, are not valid. And if that's the case, then we're here. If the commission decides that it's okay, we sort of okay it with the passage of time, then the first step has been taken, and we are off the 5th District Court.
So, Mr. Sackett, just to make sure that I am understanding sequentially what you're proposing, and please keep in mind, and Mr. Crabtree as well, that my question is posed simply to understand where we're going forward with the schedule. It by no means establishes how the commission is going to interpret this issue once it's been fully briefed and argued. Because that's not the purpose of this hearing. The purpose of this hearing is just to schedule the matter. So, Mr. Sackett, is it correct to say that Insight's interpretation of this is that the commission must first look at whether Dixie improperly or unlawfully abandoned its service territory and thereby entered into the 1981 agreement, or does the 81 agreement come before the abandonment?
I guess our view is that the 1981 agreement was an unlawful abandonment. The terms of it were giving up some service territory, we're giving away for $65,000 certain facilities that will serve that part of our current service territory. Here, St. George, take it. We believe that was not authorized by the commission. We believe that it had to be authorized by the commission. The public utility is not permitted to simply decide unilaterally to abandon an area of service responsibility. So it's the 1981 agreement that defines what we believe to be an unlawful abandonment of service.
Are the parties in agreement that the 1981 agreement did not come before the commission?
If I may address that, I think we all agree that it was not authorized, or the authorization or consent of the commission was not sought before the agreement. What we disagree about is a lot of the characterization given to the agreement. There's nothing in the agreement from our perspective that addresses abandonment of service territory outside the city's boundary, which by law the city has that right to serve. It was, if anything, it was a concession under the Strawberry Users case that Dixie could not stop the city from serving within its own boundaries. The issue, Insight has claimed that there should have been approach made to the commission. It can't cite a provision of law nor a regulation to that effect. It doesn't explain its reasoning why that should be the case. I don't believe it is the case. But beyond that, bear in mind we're speaking now of a property that, and I'm embarrassed to say, given the short notice, I've not gone and seen the property location, but we do know that it's outside the city boundary. So with respect to what the agreement may have said vis-a-vis service within the city limits, that, and characterizing the agreement as an abandonment of service territory to that extent is just inapposite. It's irrelevant to this piece of ground, which is not inside the city. The whole issue is the city doesn't want to serve, to put it plainly, I think Insight's preference is to be served by the city. It has tried for a long time to try to get that service from the city. The city is balking. I don't know what the reasonings are, whether it's constrained to issues of utility service or whether it's larger building code type of problems with the tower or right on its border. I don't know.
Mr. Crabtree, I need to move forward with this, and I realize that there are things that you need to address and familiarize yourself with, and that there are differences of opinions about how this case should move forward. I'd like to give an opportunity to the division to weigh in on this, and please share your thoughts with how you perceive this and what you think is the proper way to move forward.
Thank you, Judge Rice. This is an interesting case from what I've heard this morning. I'm not real familiar with the facts and the background behind it. But we do have a situation, from what it sounds like, where we have a regulated utility that certainly is under the primary jurisdiction of the commission. And if the ultimate question is whether Dixie has a duty to serve that area, that's an area that I think the courts would defer the jurisdiction of the commission on, because of the special expertise and knowledge, as well as the statutory authority that's granted to the commission to make those types of determinations. On the other hand, after the Heber Power Light case, I think it's fairly straightforward that the commission would not have authority to regulate the city. And so we do have a bit of a split here where we have a significant risk of duplicating efforts and inconsistent results. As far as, I suppose it's sort of the chicken and egg argument of which one comes first. I don't know that the division has a strong preference, but it may be reasonable to take a look at the service territory and the duty to serve that Dixie Power has in that area, and that could inform the courts, at least as far as what the commission views as the territory in which Dixie has an obligation to serve. How much that will affect whether there's a contractual obligation of some sort of the city to go outside of its boundaries, or whether it even can within it. Within the laws of the city, I'm not familiar with those. So I hate to speculate about what the court will do there. But I'm not opposed to going forward with this, and I suppose I'm not terribly opposed to a stay pending the fifth district court's resolution. It really threw a wrench in things to file a bolt at the same time.
Mr. Jutter, have you had an opportunity to talk to Dr. Powell and or the division about the history involved as far as the service territory?
I have a very high level understanding, but no, I haven't spoken. We haven't investigated that, and I'm not personally fully aware of all the history there.
All right. And
so I recognize there's not a lot of help in your decision, and I apologize for that.
That being said, does it not make sense, though, to address it in the order in which you presented it, though, in as much as the respondent, Dixie Escalante, is a regulated utility and under the commission's jurisdiction, and through that analysis determine what a service area is and whether that is in some way affected by the 81 agreement?
Yeah, I think it's reasonable to take it in those steps also as far as determining first whether that is within their service territory, whether they have an obligation, and then is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Determine the nature of that obligation and line extension policy.
And I think part of what I'm grappling with too is your concern that that we might in some way run up against Heber Light and Power, but it seems to me that, and I certainly invite your thoughts on this, that we could do those things that I just mentioned simply by looking at a utility that's regulated, and if St. George wants to get involved, they have the opportunity to do so by being an intervener. I can see why they may not wish to, but do you see taking the issues in the order in which you presented them being problematic from the standpoint of St. George being possibly an interested third party, but not an entity that we have jurisdiction over?
No, I don't see issues with that. The only concern I might have, just off the top of my head at this point, was fact discovery, because they're not a regulated utility on one side of this issue. But I believe we can proceed with the determination, at least of the service territory of the existing utility that is the regulated utility. Certainly that's within the jurisdiction of the commission to evaluate and make decisions on the operations of Dixie as a public utility.
Okay. Gentlemen, is there anything else that you wish to say? I'd like to take a few minutes off the record and give this matter some consideration, and then we'll come back to it. But before then, is there anything else that you wanted to add before I do so? And please, I think I've heard your points, so unless there's something new.
I would just indicate that as far as any supporting fact discovery, we think if there is any that's necessary for what I've called phase one of a bifurcated proceeding, which is what Mr. Jetter is talking about, would be relatively straightforward and could be done in a relatively short period of time.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. We'll be at recess and off the record, thank you. We're back on the record. Is the caller still on the line? Mr. Lobb, are you still on the line? Gentlemen, we are going to proceed as we normally do in our rate cases. We'll explain the rationale for that decision in our scheduling order, but just to move forward at this point, we want to start with recognition that the answer has not been filed, and really, in order to move forward, we do need to have an answer filed, and so typically that would be allowed a 30-day response, and then we would move forward with the filing of direct testimony, followed by rebuttal, story rebuttal, and we will also need to take into consideration any motions and the intervention deadline, as well as the hearing. So typically what we would do is, again, the answer would be filed within 30 days. Direct testimony would be filed 15 days thereafter, rebuttal 15 days after that, followed by 15 days for story rebuttal, and on rebuttal deadline, motions and intervention deadline would be set, and then the question is when the hearing would be held. Do you want to participate in setting of those dates, or knowing an idea of how this works in a rate case setting, and how we intend to move forward in this particular docket? Are you comfortable with the commission setting those dates, or would you like to participate in those dates right now so that you can determine whether you have any conflicts?
I am a little puzzled about the timing of discovery.
We didn't discuss discovery, but that will be included.
Well, but it sounded like you had a date for the filing of direct testimony fairly soon after the answer. And
if you think that's too soon and you need more time, we can certainly factor that in.
I guess what I would like to do is take the framework you've talked about and shoehorn in some limited time for discovery and some time for filing a motion for partial summary disposition before the necessity for parties to file testimony. And the partial summary disposition would be essentially something that doesn't require evidentiary testimony, at least as I've outlined it here, so it could be done relatively quickly.
And does this go to the issue of bifurcating?
Yes.
Okay. We'll get into that in the scheduling order, sir, but we are going to be following the schedule that I just laid out.
Okay.
So are you comfortable with the commission setting the dates? If so, I'm happy to do that. You have some sense as to how this is going to move forward as far as the dates. The only issue is really the hearing date and where we set that.
Well, we would like to participate in some sort of mutual agreement about
dates and times.
Dates, yeah.
Okay, all right. So why don't we start with the answer? And Mr. Sackett, you had mentioned earlier that you believe that the answer date is May 7th. Mr. Crabtree, do you agree with that?
Without counting dates, I think that would be fine.
Okay. So let's start there at the beginning date. And that is a Thursday. So we'll then go to pre-file testimony, starting with direct testimony, 15 days thereafter. So
I'm still struggling, Your Honor, with discovery.
Okay.
15 days after the, is it your sense that we should get our discovery underway right away?
I would anticipate you would be getting it underway right away.
Okay. And what kind of response time would you impose on responding parties?
That can vary. So, but typically, it's usually 14 days and then 7 days, depending on where you're. Where you are in the calendar, but if you have different thoughts about that, or if you think that the direct testimony needs to be set out a little bit further so as to give you more time to get discovery underway, our hope is to move this along, and that's what's been requested.
Here's the suggestion.
Okay.
We can file what might be called initial discovery on Dixie on the same schedule as the answer. We can file, and maybe even before that. And with 14 days for Dixie to respond, or if they've got discovery for us as well, and then perhaps give us another 2 weeks file direct testimony. So that would put would put filing of direct testimony out a month from the answer. 2 weeks for discovery, 2 weeks for response. I mean, 2 weeks, I'm sorry, 2 weeks for response after the 7th. We'd have discovery in by the 7th. 2 weeks for response, and then 2 weeks to absorb it all and file testimony as necessary.
Okay, so let me make sure I'm following this. So Mr. Crabtree's answer will be due on the 7th. You want to have your initial discovery request due on that same date with 2 weeks to review it, and then 2 weeks after that you'd like to have your direct testimony due?
Yes.
Okay, so direct testimony of all parties would be due on that would be June 4th. Mr. Crabtree, are you following this? I mean,
I'm trying to. So the discovery response would be due as early as the same day as the answer.
No.
So the answer is going to be due on the 7th of May. That date is the date for initial discovery request, and with that initial discovery request you'll have 14 days to respond. So your response date is actually the 21st. Okay. All right, so then that takes us to direct testimony of all parties, which will occur, the deadline will be June 4th, that's a Thursday. And I'd like to set the rebuttal for 2 weeks after that. That would be...
You mean rebuttal?
I'm sorry, yes, rebuttal. Rebuttal for 2 weeks after that, which would be the 18th. And then the rebuttal would be July 2nd. And just for clarification, June 18th would also be the date for motion deadline as well as intervention deadline.
Sorry, what date is that?
That's the same date as rebuttal, which would be
okay.
June 18th. And unless there's something else that I have not addressed, that would take us to witness and exhibit list and a hearing date. And typically what I like to do is figure out what we're going to settle on for a hearing date and then back up from that probably a few days, 5 days or so, and request that you file your witness and exhibit list. So, the three rebuttal being on July 2nd, would you like me to propose a hearing date or we could do it as quickly as we could do it as quickly as the 15th if you think that you could have your witness and exhibit list to me, say, the 8th. Would that work?
I think that's doable for us, Your Honor.
Justin, does that work for you? Mr. Crabtree, does that work for you?
The hearing date on the 15th and the exhibits and witness list on the 8th.
Yes, sir.
Is it possible to move that back possibly to like the 22nd? It will work better for the division.
I think that would be doable.
For the 21st.
Mr. Sackett and Mr. Crabtree, would that be possible for you?
That's fine for me.
Okay. Mr. Crabtree, does that look okay for you?
Actually, that's more convenient for me.
Okay, so let's say July 22nd for a hearing date, and are all of you in town, Mr. Crabtree? Are you in town?
My office is in South Shore, yes.
Okay. Are you with Smith Harvickson, or is it a different Smith?
No, I'm not with any law firm.
Oh, okay.
I'm in-house counsel to the cooperative.
Oh, you are. Okay, very good. You're probably furthest away. Mr. Sackett, you're downtown, right?
Yes.
Okay. Would you, I'll give you the option, 9 or 10 o'clock. What time would you like to start? You're good with both?
I'm fine for 9 o'clock.
Let's start with 9 o'clock. Okay. And then just for clarification, so the 15th will be the date for your witness and exhibit list. And we do need a discovery cutoff. Just so you're not filing for things right up until the hearing. Does the rebuttal deadline work for you on that, or do you think you may need it through the rebuttal?
I don't see any need for it any later than that.
Then rebuttal.
Yeah.
Justin, do you have a position on that?
Well, a little bit different. I think we need to shorten the turnaround time after direct.
Okay, so after direct, you want to make it to seven
yeah.
days, maybe? Okay, so 7 days after direct.
Yeah, and maybe the discovery cut off the days through rebuttal. So we may see something in rebuttal that we need to investigate a little further.
Okay. All right. would it be useful if I do a review of everything we just went over, or are you good with what we have and we'll just issue the order, and if there's something that comes up or if you have a conflict, you can let me know and we can deal with it at a time.
I'm fine with the dates that you've set.
Okay. Mr. Crabtree?
I think that works. If we have motions, we'll file those.
Okay. And just to be clear, that motion deadline is going to be on the 18th of June. That will be the same date as the rebuttal deadline. Okay. Are there any other matters, any other deadlines that you feel should have been covered but haven't been mentioned? Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for being here this morning, and the commission will issue this as soon as possible. And if something arises in the case in the meantime that you need to let me know about, please feel free to do so. And thank you for being here, and very nice to meet both of you. We'll be issuing the order shortly. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye.